Welcome and thanks for joining us once again on The Front Page, the show from The Racing Post, which takes you deeper into the biggest stories in the sport of racing. Coming up on this week's show, we've got the news that a number of owners are quitting the sport or preparing to quit the sport over the impact of affordability checks. We'll be looking at the news that British Racing's premiumisation policy will result in a reallocation of money from the grassroots to the top end of the sport. And we'll be casting an eye ahead to the action at York this week, including the return of the mighty Paddington. For all of that and more, I am your host, Racing Post editor Tom Kerr, and I'm delighted to be joined in the studio by two of our best reporters, Maddie Pleo and Catherine McRae. Welcome both.
Morning, Tom.
We are going to dive straight in with our first story, which is the news that due to the impact of affordability checks, a number of major owners in the sport are either winding down their involvement or quitting the sport. Now, this story was first covered early last week by the Racing Post when we reported that Phil Cunningham, the classic winning owner, was finding it impossible to get his bets on as a result of affordability checks, and that was threatening the model that he deploys as an owner, whereby he backs his own horses to supplement the cost of training fees and the limited prize money available in the sport. To tell us more about this story and the consequences of it, Maddie Blair.
Yeah, so Phil Cunningham obviously had Cockney Rebel back in 2007 win the Guineas double, the British and Irish Guineas. He's in quite a unique position in that he has a private licensed trainer in Richard Spencer. He's got 38 horses in training, and he was effectively saying that, as is the case for many owners, more of which I'll mention in a moment, betting on his horses is part of not only what he enjoys to do and a great sense of pleasure and enjoyment, but also integral to actually sustaining his business. And he, as are many, are being hit by these affordability checks that are, you know, not the, the frictionless ones that we are going to probably see if there's not a change at the end of this 12-week consultation. And I think we've also heard similar concerns from the likes of Ollie Harris, and his horse even won a big race over the weekend, Mia Harris, named after his daughter. And effectively, this is going to have a huge impact, because not only are you having owners withdraw from the sport, you know, they are some of the most integral people to sustaining it. And if we have no owners, then we don't have a sport. But equally, if you're taking away this liberty that they have, you know, Carl Hinchey was saying that was one of the things that he enjoyed most about racing, was being able to plot a route for his horses and then be rewarded on that. And you're talking months of planning and preparation. And if owners can't do that, certainly not in the way that they've been able to for so long, then they're going to wash their hands with the sport. And if owners are washing their hands with the sport, and as well they are owners as punters, that's going to have a massive impact on the levy, racing's funding structures, and also the media rights as well. So really, if things are to continue in their current vein with these current checks, which we've heard more about in more detail in the last couple of weeks, this could feasibly be the end of the game as we know it.
This is one of these classic unintended consequences where you have affordability checks which have been introduced for essentially well-meaning reasons to protect potentially vulnerable individuals who might be gambling in a compulsive manner. But then you also have racehorse owners, many of whom by the nature of being a racehorse owner are extremely wealthy people, for whom betting on the sport is a fundamental part of it. And obviously they are betting to levels which easily trigger the affordability checks as they've currently been implemented, and both how the government thinks they should be implemented in the white paper, because they might be betting thousands of pounds at a single time, and for them, you know, when weighed against their training fees, for example, or their business interests, that's not a significant sum. But obviously they are very reluctant to hand over financial details to bookmakers. And really the sort of consequence of that is that you have these extremely wealthy people, these people who can easily afford to spend vast sums of money on horses or property or holidays or whatever the many options open for those who are fabulously wealthy to spend their money, are now finding it impossible to bet, even for them, relatively small sums of money on racing, and thus leading to them effectively walking away from the sport.
And that's the thing, isn't it? I think it was in Carl Hinchey's piece. He said he'd actually given over plenty of details and information, but when it got to the point of bank statements, he thought that that was enough, and that's where he drew the line. We all have our own, you know, moral lines as to how intrusive we want these, you know, we're willing to allow people to see our finances. I think, you know, when someone like Phil Cunningham is saying he's actually being courted by offshore bookmakers, is that not hugely worrying as well, that so much of this money is going to be spent, you know, potentially unlawfully and not actually go back into racing as a whole? And that's obviously incredibly alarming, but also very, very sad.
Yeah. So this was the point that Phil Cunningham said, you know, illegal offshore bookmakers are courting him. And this is something we've seen a lot of in recent months, Catherine. The idea that when people cannot get on through regulated bookmakers doesn't necessarily mean they just stop, whether they're people who might have a gambling problem or people who are simply looking to bet to higher stakes. There are other options out there, and they will go to these very easily discoverable and very easy to use offshore bookmakers, which have no checks and balances whatsoever, but crucially also do not contribute in any way to British racing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you have people like Phil Cunningham coming out and saying he's being courted by these bookmakers. You're going to have a lot of people who are not going to be saying that and will be going to these sites. And so much of the owner's experience, you don't make money being a racehorse owner. A huge part of it is the enjoyment of the sport. And a lot of people, it's the betting on their own horses and following their journey through, plotting a big target, putting a lot of money on it and winning that and using that to supplement the expenditure of the sport. And if you take away both the enjoyment and the way for them to supplement their fees for training, for buying horses, it's only natural that people are going to be turned off the sport.
And the consequences then to racing, as we've touched on, are really quite profound, because you not only have the impact of affordability checks on punters, pure punters, but you also have the impact that has on owners who, like the names we've mentioned, might be keen to punt. But then also the fact that if you have diminishing funding coming into the sport, you have diminishing prize money, which means that already fairly poor prize money pot gets smaller, making it less viable for a larger number of owners. And then potentially you get this sort of perfect storm where the sort of decline in one area precipitates decline in another area.
Absolutely.
And racing sort of gets caught in this downward spiral.
Yeah, and I think it's now, we've been talking about it for a long time now, but it's also reaching wider conscience. You know, we've seen, I spoke to Ollie Bell fairly recently about it, and you know, he was talking about potential solutions and how, you know, it's essentially an assault on, you know, your freedoms. And we've heard trainers recently as well. Stuart Williams, I know, is very passionate about it, and has sort of even asked for a different structure of racing, which I don't think is going to happen in this country. And if it does, certainly not very, very quickly. He's been alive to it. Owen Burrows as well, who trained Ollie Harris's horse to win the St. Hugh Stakes on Saturday as well, saying that, well, you know, if he doesn't have horses in training with me, that's a big hit to my business model. And that's a trainer who has, you know, won Group Ones this year and is pretty much at the peak of his powers. So it's incredibly worrying.
So the BHA was speaking about this last week. They said that they are speaking with DCMS, that's the government ministry responsible for gambling, and with the Gambling Commission. They said they're being supported by the Owners Association and the Trainers Federation in that. The BHA said government is listening, but what happens over the next few weeks, and what does racing want to see?
I think we just need to draw attention to this subject and make it very, very clear that, as we've discussed, there's going to be huge implications for the sport. This consultation, obviously ongoing, the Race and Post, we're asking to hear from people for their experiences, and we've heard from a lot of people already. And the Gambling Minister, Stuart Andrew, he's going to join the all-party meeting on September 12, and it sounds like the MP Lawrence Robertson is going to push for racing's case against these sort of very intrusive checks. So we've just got to hope and keep applying pressure, I suppose that this is going to be hugely detrimental to racing, and you know it just wouldn't be sustainable to continue with these checks that have been proposed at the moment.
Very alarming stuff. The consultation, of course, ongoing until middle of October. We've put together a page just to help people understand how to reply to it. You can find that at racingpost.com/consultation. There's a direct link there that will take you to the Gambling Commission's consultation page. But there's also some instructions to help you understand what's required and what bits you need to fill in. Just before we move on to our second story, have you considered a Members Club Ultimate subscription? We've got a special deal on. Check this out.
Are you ready to take your passion for horse racing to the next level? With Racing Post Members Club, you gain exclusive access to the best racing insights, analysis, and tools. Immerse yourself in award-winning content, from interviews with the sport's biggest stars to race previews and behind-the-scenes features. Get the inside track with early access to the Racing Post digital newspaper from 9 p.m. in the evening and daily selections from our expert tipsters. Racing Post Members Club is your ultimate ticket to the thrilling world of racing. Subscribe today and pay just £9.99 per month for the first 2 months with the code SUMMER. See the link in the video description for more information. Terms apply.
Welcome back. British Racing's flagship premierisation policy has been a hot topic over recent months. It proposes a new tier of premier racing fixtures designed to showcase the best of the sport's action. But it's not without its controversy, including how that is going to be funded. And last week we found out some more about that. A reallocation of cash from the grassroots to the top tier of the sport, 1.9 million heading out of the weekday action and towards the very best meetings. Catherine, I think it's fair to say this has exercised a few people.
Yes, I think that is absolutely true. There's been a lot of people concerned over the past week over news from Richard Wayman, Chief Operating Officer at the BHA, that the money, firstly, the funding is still yet to be finalised. Over the fixture list that's going to come out next month, it's going to detail around 160 of these new premier meetings that will be run in this protected two-hour window on certain Saturdays. We heard from several racecourses, the smaller grassroots racecourses, Hexham, Musselburgh, Thirsk, about their concerns about feeling really left behind in this conversation. And we had James Sanderson from Thirsk was the one that outlined about 1.9 million would be probably coming out of the lower tier into the top tier, which he calculated as coming to about £500 to £600 out of each race. And we also heard from trainers that would use these tracks. Jim Goldie, Simon Whittaker were among those, really given a sense that they felt their voices weren't being heard, that their tracks are going to suffer and that they're going to lose owner interest. We already spoke about how owners from the top tier of the sport are losing interest through affordability checks, and now down at the bottom tier we're facing less prize money, less support for those smaller tracks who are going to be facing a lot more problems, not just with the prize money coming out of the racing, but they will be part of those tracks reshuffled during this premier window. So there's a lot of concern there, they're feeling, and definitely the sense that they're being overlooked, perhaps.
And the impact from some of these smaller tracks also compounded by the fact that they will lose some of their most valuable fixtures on Saturdays because of this new control mm-hmm. over the core window, as it's being called, on a Saturday, with just two premier meetings and one other meeting on most Saturdays, means that some smaller tracks, which currently have well-attended Saturday meetings, are going to have to move them either to different days or to earlier or later start times, which they believe is going to have a knock-on impact in the attendance and ticket money and food and beverage sales they make from those fixtures.
I believe a figure of around 40,000 was given that for a difference between an evening meeting and an afternoon meeting at some of these smaller tracks. And you know, I'm from up in Scotland, and I know these small tracks. There's a real core community of people that go there, and they're very beloved by the people that attend these meetings. And yes, they don't attract the huge crowds some of the other ones do, but these shifting of times will affect them significantly. And it is concerning for them, and it's natural to expect them to try and make their voice heard when it feels sometimes, I imagine, that these top tracks, these top owners and trainers are driving the conversation in this premiarisation idea?
Maddie, there's kind of two sort of areas of controversy here, or areas of discussion. The first is about premier racing and whether it's right that, well, I think actually, fair to say, most people agreed it was right to create premier racing, this idea that you have this top tier analogous to the Premier League. It's really easy to understand. The prize money is good. The idea is that you get good field sizes, you get a good marketing behind it, good buzz behind it, good crowds, and that you can then take this out to a wider audience and say, this is our best stuff. And lots of people sort of heard that and said, we like that. But then there's always a but. You have to fund that somehow.
Yeah.
And now we hear that the funding is going to essentially be at the expense of the bottom tiers of the sport. So, you know, where do we stand on that? Do you think this is a necessary thing to do given racing's problems, or is racing sort of going about this in a way that's ultimately going to cause more pain than benefit?
I think ultimately, you know, we're not fortunate enough to have that many solutions at the moment. And this has clearly been proposed when it was involving just reshuffling race times maybe and a little bit of delegation among you know, types of races, what times they're run. That was easy to understand. Everyone could get on board with that. But now when it's diverting money away from the grassroots into the upper tier, you're going to have a system whereby almost racing is cut in half. And possibly some of those smaller tracks, you know, we're talking down the line after the two-year trial period, you know, it's not viable for them to run. And you're also, typical racing, talking about people in a range of situations. You know, you have independent race courses, you have race courses, you know, under ARC, etc. So they're all actually speaking and pulling in different directions. Mm. So it's just incredibly difficult to get everyone on the same page. As a very, very broad concept, I can understand it, and it makes sense to make racing more identifiable and to focus on the upper echelons. But equally, you need something for that to stand on top of. And if you continue to take away from the smaller tracks that are probably suffering as it is, and I mean, it's similar to other things going on in racing. You know, we talk about the concentration of talent. That's then going to happen to the race courses as well as you know, almost the horses. So yeah. I think you'll end, if you know, this goes ahead as planned, you will end up with a lot of the smaller tracks suffering and the bigger tracks, you know, doing even better out of it. So you're going to end up with two different halves of the sport, and those smaller owners, you know, in perhaps in more remote locations or maybe even syndicates, could be pushed out because some of the smaller tracks are going to struggle, and therefore the bigger owners are just going to monopolise.
And that potentially, or likely, indeed, compounded by the impact of losing some of these Saturday meetings. And as Catherine said, you know, these smaller tracks have a real place in their community. And it, you know, this idea of losing Saturday afternoon meetings at some of these small tracks is one of the bits I really struggle with, because this idea that, you know, you need to have a limited number of meetings in order for the spotlight to be on your best doesn't really stack up in my eyes. You don't see that at any other kind of sport. You don't have conference football because you want to ensure Premier League football is given as much space in the spotlight as possible. And the consequences for that is not just that some of these tracks might be less viable, but also that those close-knit communities, which have their connection with them, are being deprived of some of their most important days. That one feels to me like a mistake.
Yeah, and I think, you know, when you're talking about smaller race courses, as Catherine said, you're talking about communities that have very sort of strong bonds with the race courses, not even necessarily the horse racing, but there's so much history there, and it's a real concern. I can understand the premierisation as a concept, but to me, when it was just moving fixtures around, I kind of thought, well, how much difference is that going to make? Obviously, when you get into the finances, it then becomes heavier and these knock-on effects occur.
And Catherine, let's not forget, the stakes are really high here, because the entire reason why this premierisation concept has come about is because for the last few years, the sort of KPIs, racing's dashboard, has been flashing amber, if not red. You know, field sizes have been under pressure, attendances have been under pressure. Obviously, betting revenues are under pressure, partly through affordability checks, but possibly also through that uncompetitive racing. You know, racing does have to do something. It does have to change. And, you know, this strategy, a lot is riding on it, basically.
Yeah, I mean, racing has been accused in the past of being quite stuck in its ways, and we should be willing to at least try new strategies. And this is, of course, a two-year trial, so we will... doesn't mean it's set in stone forever, but it's worth taking a stab at and seeing how it goes. And we still don't yet have all the details of how these premier race days will look or how what is the criteria for them, which we will hopefully find out next month. But it is important that we take a stab to try and save the future of the sport, as Julian Thick said on this morning's paper from Newbury. It's really important that we at least don't sit complacent while things are kind of the way they are right now.
Thanks so much, Catherine. We'll be back in just a minute with our final story, but before that, take a look at the Racing Post free bets page. Welcome back. The Paddington Express steams into York this week, highlight of the fantastic Ebor Festival, and Aidan O'Brien's Superstar is bidding to make it five Group 1s on the trot in the Jobmont International. Desert Crown's withdrawal from the race leaves him with a slightly more depleted lineup, and he's long odds on to make himself the second most successful Group 1 winner in a single season in Europe, just one behind See the Stars. Maddie, do we think Paddington is going to take another step towards potentially matching that incredible See the Stars record?
Yes, I do. I didn't a couple of days ago because I tweeted something along the lines of, if Desert Crown turns up, I think he will win. But that if has been...
It's faded away.
Yeah, it's been proven correct, which is really sad because he's such a talented horse and we've seen this on a number of occasions now. And he would have been, obviously the Dante winner over the course and distance, he would have been one of his biggest threats, in my opinion. I don't think this is a stronger race as it could have been. Mostadaf's obviously his key threat. We saw what he could do at Ascot, but I think as some of those players there did definitely underperform Baybridge and Luxembourg, etc. I think some of those older horses have generally been a little bit disappointing this season, which is why Paddington has, you know, assumed this remarkable position. I mean, he's done very similar to what Giants Causeway did in winning that string of Group 1s. And I just think he's a really curious horse, the way they've campaigned him. You know, he was not the archetypal Coolmore Ballydoyle star to come from handicap ranks. Maybe that's part of the reason why they've campaigned him as they have. You know, certainly different to August Rodin, who has been grabbing all the headlines. But which is weird because he would be a very attractive stallion prospect, especially being by Siuni again. So yeah, I think he's proved he can do it all. And in Spiral, of course, boosted his Sussex Stakes form. I mean, she didn't perform that day on that ground, but she still won the Jack Lamawa and became one of few to have done it back to back twice. He just doesn't seem to have any holes in him, really. He's got quite an ungainly head carriage, which is, I must admit, something I don't really like to look at, but listen, doesn't stop him. He's incredibly talented, and I just think it's great that we can see a horse of his calibre so regularly. I think that's really special.
And there's an interesting piece in the Racing Post on Saturday looking at what Paddington has done so far and what he'd have to do to sort of take the step up to join some of the true sort of legends of the game. Now, obviously, we've mentioned the Group 1 record. And I think his defining characteristic so far is that toughness that's enabled him to race so many times, maintain a perfect record this season. It's probably not got the strength of rivalry at York for him to, unless he won in a very uncharacteristic Paddington way, for him to sort of make that step forward, though, and really prove just how good he is. He does need to come up against a top field if he's going to do that.
And I think he probably won't do until the Arc, will he? I mean,
if he goes for it,
I mean, the Irish Champion Stakes, will that fit into what they want to do with him? I'm not sure. He could face a horse we're going to mention later on, Ace Impact there. If not, then he will face him at Longchamp. But to me, because he's come from this very unique position and he's probably not facing the quality of some of the other superstars we've seen in recent years, he's going to either need to win the arc or he's going to need to stay in training. And I don't think the latter has any hope in hell of happening.
I fear you're right. Let's move on to the next day at York. We've got a rematch in the Yorkshire Oaks between the Irish Oaks 1-2, Save a Lance Dance and Blue Stalking. Do we think it's the same result, Catherine?
I think so. I'm a big fan of Save a Lance Dance. I thought she's such a game mare. She was brilliant at Chester. We were lucky enough to be there to see her win there. And I think we've been taken with her ever since. The Blue Stocking gave it a really good effort in the Irish Oaks, but I really think Save Last Dance has got that class edge on her, and O'Brien's team have been firing right now, and a bit of soft ground, and I think it's famous last words, but I think it's a close case, in my opinion.
Maddie, same?
Depends what the ground's going to do. I think the track configuration might suit Blue Stocking, and also whoever rides her is going to have the knowledge that they thought they had the race won last time. So if they turn it into a bit of a pace tactical battle, that would play against Save the Last Dance, who's more of a dour stayer. But if the race is to pan out, you know, as a lot of races do, if there's an even gallop and if there's a little bit of jute in the ground, yeah, I think Save the Last Dance is the better filly, but she probably needs things to go right.
The Nunthorpe on Friday, Highfield Princess, bit of a fan favourite, heading the betting. Also an interesting sort of subplot there is potentially Andrea Zinni's last Group 1 appearance in Britain. He's off to Hong Kong. He's riding Big Evs for Mick Appleby. Tough race, not an easy one to lob to you, Catherine, but how do you see it going?
Well, Hart would say Highfield Princess. I think she, as you said, is such a fan favourite. She's brave. She was brilliant at Goodwood recently. Was it Goodwood?
It was good. God. It was good. No, okay,
I was like,
we're all having a moment.
God, it's Monday, isn't it?
Right. So do you want to go in again from?
It's Highfield Princess,
didn't you?
Yeah. My heart says Highfield Princess. I think she is such a popular mare, and she was brilliant at Goodwood in the Qatar Stakes. I think she's got all the ability to win. I am very interested by Big Eves. I was covered his Molcombe Stakes when I was there at Goodwood, and you could tell Mick Appleby immediately after the race was already had his heart set on the Nunthorpe. He was, you know, entertaining the idea to the press, but you could tell he was very enthusiastic about it, and them supplementing him. I would have been more surprised if they hadn't than they had. And I think he is a really exciting call, and it's nice to see a yard like McAppleby's have a live contender in a big race like this.
Andrea Zeni off to Hong Kong. You're very familiar with Hong Kong, of course. Sad to lose a jockey of his caliber from Britain. How do we think he's going to get on in Hong Kong, though?
It's a very tough environment. Very, very difficult. I think he'll get on well because he seems to have a very good mentality and he's got a lot of experience. He's also done a lot of riding all over the world, which will no doubt stand him in good stead. There are just two tracks, but those two tracks, Happy Valley, Sha Tin, place huge emphasis on speed and on tactical nous. Andrea is, you know, as far as the press concerned, great to deal with, which is also brilliant when you're dealing with, you know, you're ultimately employed by the Hong Kong Jockey Club, and fighting for rides among owners is very challenging.
No agents, is that right? No agents in Hong Kong. So they have to be their own sort of marketer, salesman.
Incredibly fickle. Yeah. Incredibly fickle. There was a high-profile case recently. Karis Teton was jocked off Romantic Warrior, who we might see in the Cox Plate. And, you know, if you ask anyone, you say Karis didn't really do a great deal wrong, to be honest.
Yeah.
So, yes, it's going to be difficult for him, but he's winning everything before he goes. Van Dijk in the morning on Sunday, yesterday, and Big Evs. I think it's great getting a two-year-old in these races. Just adds so much more dimension. And, yeah, great to have a localish trainer. To me, I think probably now is the most local to my home in Mick Appleby, fighting against the big guns at York. Love it.
Fantastic. Do you think if you were Andrea, you would be regretting your decision to go to Hong Kong?
No, because I think one of the reasons he's gone is because he doesn't have that retainership anymore. And we know that not even so much with trainers, but with owners these days, that's such a key part of, you know, getting consistently top class rides. I think he has been dealt a fairly hefty, without, you know, not wishing to take away from anything he's achieved recently, but I think he's been given quite a big slice of good fortune. And ultimately, I think you would see, you know, those rides taken away from him and given to others who have more established connections with the same owners.
Just to, before we wrap up on this, sticking with France, the big sort of race last week was arc favourite Ace Impact at Deauville. Victory, but not necessarily in such a manner that enhanced, or certainly not in the...
That's harsh.
The bookmakers certainly didn't think it enhanced his arc chances. I have to say, I didn't find it, I wasn't blown away by it. I didn't think he won in the style of a hot arc favourite, and at 4-1 for Longchamp, I wouldn't be diving in. But you feel differently.
Yeah, I do. I disagree. I actually think 4-1 is not terrible value. This is just a really, really special horse. And I actually was covering Graham Rodway in the weekend a couple of weeks ago. And I spoke about how Paddington, obviously, with his record, he is a very short price to be champion three-year-old. But in terms of on a single performance, I think Ace Impact has the potential to overtake that. Indeed, even on his Prix de Jockey Club win, which probably did ooze a bit more star quality. He would be right up there, and I think he is probably the most exciting horse in training right now. I think he did everything right that he needed to do in the Prix Guillaume d'Orne. I don't think, often in these French races, they're not inducive to a superstar performer. You know, they're often going quite a slow gallop. He's settled in last, so to make that run from the back of the field and then not just win, but actually win quite cosily, I think it can be kind of hard to analyse. Visually, it doesn't always look that impressive, but as a son of Cracksman, a horse who improved all throughout the autumn of his three-year-old campaign and beyond, and over a mile and a half, this is a horse who I love. And to be honest, with several runners sort of going by the wayside, I think he's the right favourite for the arc, definitely getting the allowance. You like Hookham, don't you?
I do like Hookham a lot.
I like Hookham too, but yeah.
I just think for me that there's so many positives about him. We know he likes a trip. We know he likes soft ground. He'll almost guaranteed that in the arc. And there is a, statistically, the race doesn't favour horses coming off a long break, but I think Hookham has proven again and again that he loves coming off those. He won the Coronation Cup off a big break. He won the Brigadier Gerard against Desert Crown off a big break. I think he's a should at least be guaranteed a good performance.
Yeah, it was a really interesting piece in today's Racing Post about that very point. I agree. I still think Hookham doesn't get the respect his form deserves, and he probably looks at the value. But obviously fascinating if Paddington turns up. It's shaping up to be a brilliant arc. That's almost everything we've got time for this week. But before we wrap up, it falls to me to choose the subject of this week's front page. And what a feast of news stories, angles, racing action we have to choose from. York is always one of the highlights of the year, and Paddington, the burgeoning superstar of the season, obviously gives that fantastic heft this coming week. Premierisation, such an important story, and it's fascinating to hear that more details emerging about what that premier racing is going to look like, even if the details are slightly alarming in places. But I think it's got to be the latest news about owners quitting the sport due to the impact of affordability checks. It goes to the very core of racing's sort of viability, and indeed featured on the front page of the Racing Post on several days last week, and is undoubtedly a story we'll continue to cover. So, guys, thank you so much as ever. You've been fantastic panellists. Appreciate everything. And thank you as well for joining us on the front page. We will be back again next week with more racing debates. Indeed, the Racing Post YouTube channel will be very busy this week with lots of York Ebor coverage, so do check it out. And if you would like to go to the Breeders' Cup on the Racing Post dime, it is your last chance to do so. Our competition to win tickets to this year's Breeders' Cup concludes this week. So check out the details in this advert now, and thanks again for joining us on the front page.